Hemsworth, also known as my dad, has been a chronic worrier for as long as I can remember. In Arkansas, my family members lovingly refer to him as a worry wart. And I can't tell you if my dad has always been this way since childhood, but maybe after raising two older daughters, by the time he got to me, he knew just how much could go wrong. From a young age, I was conditioned that every single time I saw the crisp, metallic wrapper of a piece of hard candy beckon my wild, sugar-crazed eyes, that candy would first fall into my dad's hands, only to be crushed into dissatisfyingly tiny pieces before it ever went into my mouth. We repeated this ritual with peppermints, and don't get me started on gummy worms or gummy bears. I wasn't even allowed to eat them in my dad's presence. Everything that went into my mouth was a potential choking hazard. I remember trips to the lake with my grandparents featured the warmth of sunburned cheeks, the ill-founded fear of fish biting my toes, my mother skiing only once and then never vowing never to do it again, at least until next year. And then those trips always featured my dad, upright, his hands leaving sweat stains on the boat's silver railing, his eyes transfixed on my bobbing head. While I was in the water, his anxiety compounded because he couldn't swim, but he vowed that he would die trying to save me, which would probably mean we would both die. At the tender age of 16, my mother decided that I could travel to Europe with a group of 50 high school band students clad in matching cherry red windbreakers. Let me stress, my mother made this decision, and my dad only accompanied us to Memphis to try to dissuade me from getting on the plane. In a musky hotel room, his attempts at persuasion culminated when he offered to leave the room and purchase me my first car that very night if I wouldn't get on the bus to the airport the next day. To which my very ashamedly spoiled teenage self replied, "Dad, you know you're going to buy me a new car anyway." He was not amused. As they herded us onto the bus before sunrise, Dad trapped me in one last smothering hug, and I felt the plop of his tears on the top of my head as he released me into this sea of luggage and instruments and sleepy teenagers. Through the bus window, I could still see him standing there, tears streaming down his face, surrounded by the smiles and waves of other excited parents. He stood as such a stark, melancholy presence that the kids on the bus began shouting and pointing, "Look, Claire, your dad, he's crying!" Oh, I was so embarrassed. While in college, Dad and I shared the same experience at least once a semester. Picture me. It's a Friday night, and I'm a young, rebellious Harding student going to Waffle House. Because nothing screams college like cheap, greasy food at inappropriate hours. Inevitably, I would leave my phone in the car, only to be greeted by a bright screen with 10 notifications of the same thing. Dad, miss call. Dad, miss call. Dad, miss call. Immediately, I would call my dad, only to be met with the fact that he was driving in his car, the 45 minutes it took to get from my house in Greenbrier to my dorm room in Searcy, Arkansas. Our conversation was always the same. He would begin relieved and a little angry, tell me to keep my phone on, assure me he wasn't mad at me, just worried, and end with, "I love you." From crushed peppermints to checking in on those late Friday nights, my dad spent his life attempting to guard the people he loved from harmful experiences. My dad was willing to worry and fret over the little things, the big things, and everything in between, so that we didn't have to face pain and suffering. He was willing to drown if it meant saving us. On June 23rd, 2018, my dad's worst nightmare became a reality. He picked up the phone and called the Independence County Sheriff office to inform them that my sister was missing. 9 months later, my sister is still missing. Upon hearing the news of her disappearance, I flew home to be with my family, and I have this moment burned into my mind. Dad and I sat together outside on the back porch of my parents' home. The porch light was flickering as moths hovered around the bulb. And even in the evening glow of sunset, the air was still thick and wet from the day's humidity. My dad sat like he usually does, with one leg crossed over the other and a cigarette held loosely in his hand. But this was not a normal evening where I found him inviting me to listen to a newly discovered song or sharing a sappy quote from his most recent Facebook scroll. His usually content form was weighed down by this almost palpable sorrow. His eyes, they held this resignation, as though the years of anxiety and stress and constant worry evaporated in an instant. And in their place remained this deep understanding of his own powerlessness, his own inability to protect the ones he loved from all the horrors of life. That helplessness pulled in his eyes, and a steady stream of tears ran down his face. A face that looked older and more worn and ragged than I remembered. As I remember that image of my father, I'm reminded of another father who met his son on a bitter evening among a grove of olive trees. The glow of silver and shadow danced across his son's skin as moonlight shone through the trees. His child knelt in the dust, his body rocking back and forth in a frantic rhythm. Sweat gleamed on his forehead and mingled with the tears that carved their way down his cheeks. He buried his hands into the folds of his robe, mangling the coarse fabric between his clenched fist. And his son's voice reached out to the father, frantic, afraid. "My father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering pass from me. But you know I want your will to be done, not mine. And again, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering pass from me. But you know that I want your will to be done, not mine. Again, my Father, if it is in any way possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. But you know I want your will to be done, not mine. The Father was in the garden while his Son begged for his life, for a way to avoid the suffering that awaited him, the betrayal that awaited him, the humiliation that awaited him. The Father knew the agony that awaited his Son. In that garden, the Father knew true suffering as sweat like drops of blood poured down his only Son's face. To watch the one you love in agony, there is no way to describe that kind of pain. My dad knows what it's like to lose a child. He knows what it's like to feel powerless to protect, powerless to shield the one you love. He knows what it's like to feel your world twist and break. Our Father knows what it's like to lose a child. Our Father knows what it's like to feel powerless to protect, powerless to shield the one you love. He knows what it's like to feel suffocated by sorrow. We pursue a God who knows what it means to lose, to grieve, to suffer. A God who experienced palpable suffering in the garden among the olive trees. A God who experienced palpable suffering as he sat with his Son in the garden among the olive trees. When we suffer among the mosquitoes in the backyard, when we suffer in antiseptic-soaked waiting rooms, when we suffer in our beds while sleep avails us, we encounter suffering in all of its twisted forms. When that happens, we share in the suffering of the Father. We share in the suffering of the Son. And do you know what else? The Son shares in our suffering. The Father shares in our suffering. We are a people well acquainted with suffering. And the beautiful truth is that we are loved by a God who is equally well acquainted with suffering. Take comfort. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and he said, "Sit here while I go over there to pray." And he took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. And he told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." And And he went on a little further and bowed his head to the ground, praying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." And then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "Couldn't you watch even for 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation, for the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Then Jesus left them a second time and he prayed, "My Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done." When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they could not keep their eyes open. So he went to pray alone a third time, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. But you know I want your will to be done, not mine." Then he came to the disciples again and said, "Go ahead and sleep, have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Look, here comes my betrayer.